Welcome back. That was a joke. Welcome back. We're here again. Reincarnation.
Okay.
We've done this class before, you don't remember?
Do we have to die?
Three generations ago? Did we sit around in the cow shed in Poland? No, you don't remember that? Obviously you weren't learning, so that's why we have to go back and do it again. Tom, okay, let's try and let's recap. So what do we talk about? So yesterday we introduced our topic looking at some of the sources for the concept of reincarnation. We saw that we saw a couple of sources. Today, let's move on with a more explicit reference to reincarnation, which is found in the book of Eov, Job. What does it say over there? So it says over there in Eov, first of all, before we get to what it says in there, it says about Eov, about who was Eov. Eov suffered a lot. It's a very difficult book to read, Eov, because Eov is in the book of Eov, painted out as a very righteous man who has no reason at all for suffering. And he suffers a lot. Hashem gives the Satan permission to afflict him. It's a very difficult story to understand, to deal with, to process what it means, what that means about Hashem. It's very difficult. So commentators say that the reason why Eov suffered, was allowed to suffer, well, he was a Gilgal, and it wasn't to do with this. In this life he was righteous. In this life he did suffer. He suffered on the surface. His friends came to comfort him. No one could comfort him. But in the end, he's comforted with the youngest explains his suffering in a way that he can accept. But it's still not clear, right? But the only way we can understand it, really, in terms of trying to deal with it, is knowing that Eov was someone else in a previous lifetime. So there's at least two explanations of who Eov was. Who was Eov? So one explanation is that Eov was one of three advisors to Paro on what to do with Am Yisrael. There was Bilam, there was Eov, and there was Yitro. And Yitro argued against. Bilam argued for killing the Jews. And Eov said nothing. Eov was silent. And because Eov was silent, he could have said something and then he would have been a 2-1. It would have changed everything. So his silence means that now you're going to have to suffer in silence. Right? One of the explanations. Yes, that's brought in the Gemara. Another explanation, which is not in the Gemara, I think it's in one of the Midrashim, is that Eov was Terach, was the father of Abraham. And being the father of Abraham, we know that Abraham's dad was an idol maker, right? He went around smashing the idols, etc. We all know that from the stories. But the Midrashim explained it. It's not that Terach just happened to be one of the idol makers. He was the idol. He was the guy. He was Mr. Idol. Mr. Idol maker. Right? And therefore, in order to rectify that, because basically it's one thing to sin personally, and it's not advisable. Right? But Tov, that's one thing. It's another thing, we mentioned this in the Gemara class this morning, it's another thing to cause other people to sin. When you're the number one idol maker in the world, and you're creating and causing all these people to do idolatry, that's a huge tikkun that you need to try and fix. So Eob's suffering, although it was very, very harsh, had to be commensurate with what he'd done in the world. He was a source of he was actually the opposite, right, of Abraham came to bring Hashem into the world, and he was like the opposite. So if you can imagine the opposite of what Abraham was doing, he had to fix it.
He's the equivalent of Larry Flint or Hugh Hefner in our generation.
Maybe. Okay, so anyway, so that was who Eob was. But in the book of Eob, there is an interesting pasuk. What's the pasuk? The pasuk which says, therefore God does all of these things twice or three times with a man to return his soul from the pit to be enlightened with the light of the living. So we'll get into exactly what it's talking about two, three times. But just on the pshat level, we see that Hashem returns his soul from the pit in order to be amongst the living again. Right? So you see here in the Tanakh a very clear reference to the concept of coming back from the dead to come back into the living again, right? To be brought back. That a Gilgul, it's not just one shot. Yes.
Question about Hashem put us in this world to fix.
Yeah.
So how is it, let's say by Shuva, maybe he made a Shuva when he was 40, so the life before was like a mess. So how you can fix this? So it's
no. When a person at the age of 40 makes Shuva, he's doing Shuva on the last 40 years as well.
So
I made Shuva.
The life before?
I made Shuva when I was, well, I started making Shuva, I'll let you know when I finish, but I started making Shuva when I met my wife, which was, actually I probably didn't start then, I started a bit later, a couple of years after meeting my wife. I started keeping stuff, but actually to make Shuva, I didn't actually start making Shuva until later. So say 30, give or take, I started making proper Shuva. So the first 30 years, let's say up to bar mitzvah, you're not accountable, but there's 17 years worth of avirot there, or you know, that I need to do shuva. So I didn't have that. I don't need to come back for that. If I do shuva now,
you not remember all the shuva
that I need to do in this life, although doesn't matter. The Rav Arish teaches that the teshuva person needs to do is the teshuva that Hashem shows you. Hashem's not showing you, and you don't need to make teshuva. And also, and the same question is, how do I know if I've made teshuva on it, or I need to do make more teshuva? Because if it's still bothering me, then I haven't finished making teshuva on it. Right? If I did stuff, as a kid, as a teenager, whatever, and it's still bothering me, and I haven't actually done proper tshuva on it yet, because it's still with me. Hashem's showing me that it's still affecting me, it's still bothering me. But if I now think back to that time, I'm like, my heart is clear, I'm completely okay with it, and fine, then pshat level, I did tshuva. Right? Hashem's not showing me that I needed to deal with it. Hashem's not trying to trip me up. I get to Shemayim, and he says, why didn't you do tshuva on it? All that stuff, well, you didn't do tshuva. And I turn around and say, well, you didn't show me. And he goes, yeah, you're right, sorry. Go back again. No. If I want to, if I have genuine desire, whatever the way I want to go, the Gemara says, the way a person wants to go, they lead him. So if I want to make teshuva, Hashem's going to let me make teshuva. He's not going to put in a stumbling block. Right? We can fix everything. We don't need to come. We don't need to come back. It's not ideal to come back. Come back is by far a second best choice. If mamash, it's not. So he doesn't want. Hashem doesn't want us to have to come back to fix.
Really nice and nice that you should, if you have a choice, they give you a choice to come back again. But I said, by everything possible and all your power, demand them or not to send you back.
Right.
Don't come back again.
Don't come back. Well, there, and then, but he said, interestingly, additionally, he said, after saying you should do everything in your power never to have to come back again,
right.
He said, if they allow you to come back on condition that you get to visit Oman once,
right.
Come back. It's worth it. It's worth it. If they say you can come back on condition that you're allowed to visit Oman even once, it's worth coming back.
But in the quote for Job.
Yes, in Job. Sorry, back to Job.
They're talking about the pit. Is that the reference to Gehenna?
Probably, yes.
A reference to cleaning yourself up, as
yes.
in the
yes.
analogy of putting a garment through a dry cleaning plant.
Yes.
And if you've ever been through a dry cleaning plant, they use hot steam to get the stain out, and they use a stiff brush to get the stain out.
Right.
And then they dip it in chemicals.
Right.
And you spun around.
Right.
And then through the dryer, which is being more spinning around.
Right. So coming back from the pit is the analogous to coming back from Gehenna, because you are in the pit, because otherwise you would need to come back. You're not coming back from Gan Eden. If you're in Gan Eden, you're there, your feet up, you're done. So yeah, you're coming back from the pit.
Isn't
yeah.
that so? The time, 30 years or 40 years, you don't know Hashem.
Yeah.
Because it's a kind of Gilgulim process or the Shuvah process, because like Gehenna, you know Hashem is like this.
Yes, so therefore, what's the word?
Like
therefore, what
okay,
happened?
For 30, 40 years, you suffer. Because you're not too close to Hashem. So it's
okay.
It's
suffering as well. Yeah. All my suffering gets taken into account when I'm judged upstairs in the heavenly courts, and I have all my averas, all my sins on one side, and on the other side of the scale I have all my mitzvahs. So on the side of the scale with all my mitzvahs is also all my suffering. My suffering is counted as the kapara, so it helps. So the fact that I suffered and I didn't have a fun time for the last 20 years, right, while I was doing all that, that's helpful for me. It's much worse if I didn't suffer. Right? It's much worse if I enjoyed myself immensely while doing all that. Then I don't have anything to counteract on the other side of the scale. Doesn't mean I still could do
tshuva. You can do tshuva on, and you'd be happy with where you went through, and that changes to mitzvah.
Right. Everything.
In your state, you grab more, you understand more. You make tshuva for tshuva. We now in our state, we're happy, but maybe in 2 years you're more happy because
of course, so you
keep
going.
You don't know what is.
You just keep going.
Right.
Right.
And so the averas are what causes to do the tshuva, which is why they become to be merits. Right. Everything is good. Everything is good. Even the averot are good. Even sinning is good. Why? Because it's that what causes you to do the tshuva. Something that causes you to do teshuva is a good thing. Right? So, but only at the end of it, not beforehand. When I'm sinning, it's really bad. But afterwards, I can change it to make it into something good. Right? That whole idea of changing averot into positive deeds, the fact that I look back on it, and now with my new perspective, that sin makes me actually want to do teshuva. I can't believe I did that. Hashem, I'm really sorry. That is now a great thing. Poor Hashem. Because that caused you to now run to Hashem. So that's how you turn something bad into something good, because everything, and what's going to happen, everything Hashem does is good. So either we take hold of it now and do shuva on it, that's about shuva, or in Shemayim, it has the same effect. What happens in Shemayim? In Shemayim, you go to a place called Gehinnom, unfortunately. What happens in Gehinnom? Through the embarrassment of the deeds we did, we make shuva. But again, the sins are good, because that's what's giving me the embarrassment and I can clean myself up. If I don't have the embarrassment, I'm lost, I'm finished, I'm nothing. But now I can be embarrassed about it. So so the sins are even good. I'm in Gehenna being embarrassed like never before, and it's cleaning me up. I'm like, that. What's causing me to have that cleaning process? The fact that I sin. So everything is good in the world, right? Which is why you can say that there's no bad. Everything is for the good. even the bad things that happened, we're going to look at them in a different way, that they're actually helpful, that they're good.
But isn't it better to have the embarrassment here and now?
For sure.
When you can do the tshuva?
So that's why. And a person that can take it upon themselves now to be embarrassed and to use that as a motivator. Or it's going to happen anyway, but it's just not going to be so much fun.
Embarrassment.
Yeah, cool.
So, some people here know the Chabad call that we don't have in the shop.
Okay.
It comes down from the time they taught that.
Okay.
Now, Rabbi Brody in Uman taught this, that this is a strong Breslau fact as well.
Okay.
I'm not saying whether I believe it or not, because I'm actually think it's a very interesting concept whether it or not. My understanding, we don't only bring this list, my understanding is that the Neshama is what goes through Gehenna. And we're now talking not about a Jew, but about a Goy who's going to this pit, we're going to pit Gehenna, and we're saying he's going through Gehenna because Yov is not a Jew. So what does that mean? Where are we with this?
For start, we don't know that the Yov is not a Jew. We don't know that Yov is not a Jew.
I thought the Gemara brought down that the three advisors of Paro were not Jews.
Yeah, but that's a Gilgal.
Yeah,
that's a Gilgal.
Okay, so that's the other question I have is I'm studying Tractate Sota, and it talks about them as if that is them. It brings them up in Vidya Kanega Gemita that why is the Sota the conscious way? It's Vidya Kanega Gemita. The proof is these three, but it says nothing about Gilgal in the actual Gemara itself. It talks to them like they're just Stalin's advisors.
Nahon. So. You're right. So the time period that we're talking about, either they lived a really long time or they were Gilgulim. Either he was the advisor and he lived for several hundred years and it's the same person, or it's not. The pshat is that it's not the same person, because in the book itself, Eov says quite explicitly, I've done nothing, check me, there's nothing going on here, right? It's not check me, and apart from that time when I used to be the advisor to Pharaoh in Egypt, right? On the Pshat level, it's not like it was the same person, even though the Gemara is talking about it maybe in that way, because it's the same Neshama, and that's why it's talking about the same person, because he wants to give Mida Kenegin Mida, but this is why it happened.
When we're a Gilgul of somebody else, we have to do Tshuva for him too? The previous Gilgul, or we just punished for them?
No, we have to come back and fix.
Come back and fix something from the past, but
that we don't know about.
But if we lose, if my kids are being killed and I can think that I'm dying, then I should say, it can't be me, saying it's not me, it must be someone else, so I would have to do Tshuva for it.
I understand. Explain again.
The previous Gilgul is being punished now by having his children die.
No, he's not having punished. No. Gilgul is not for punishment. A Gilgul is not for punishment. Gilgul is not for punishment. A Gilgul is only for rectification. Punishment, Hashem has plenty of that stuff in Shemayim. Gilgul is only to fix. It's coming to fix.
A person who loses a child shouldn't feel.
I know, you're right. So we just said that according to Eov, it's also coming to it's coming to fix, maybe by way of punishment, if you want to call it punishment, fixing, right.
Eov himself is not being fixed.
Yeah, he is.
It is.
Eov is the same person, just got a different name on his badge. It's the same guy.
Yeah.
He's being fixed. He came down and said, I agree, Hashem, tear me down there, do that to me, I've got no complaints and no arguments, please, I'm waiting.
Did he say that?
Because I realized what I did, if he was terror, I realized I just destroyed your whole world and turned everyone away from you, and how can I live with myself? Please give me a rectification. Hashem said, I've got a rectification for you, it's not pretty. If you want, we can do this and it will rectify your neshama. He says, tell me whatever it is. And Hashem says, I'm going to send you down. You're going to be a righteous person. And you're going to have to suffer. And he says, do it. Let's do it. Let's go. 100%. No complaints.
While he's living, he doesn't
realize. Nahon. That's the whole thing. If he knew, then it wouldn't be the tikkun. It wouldn't be such a... I knew exactly what was going on with me and why it was going on. It's not a test.
He would have to be doing tshuva
His teshuvah is to accept it. His teshuvah is to accept it.
To accept
the suffering.
Happening.
Yeah, which he does at the end. Avio. Well, all his original friend, he's not happy, I'm not happy. And at the end, he accepts.
You see,
and that's his teshuvah.
He was very righteous. When we punish, there's a message. You see, now maybe I did something. I have to make sure after something. But he was righteous.
That's what I say. So in his case, once you check yourself and you've made sure that it's nothing in this life, so fine, then you can worry about whether or not it's a previous, right? But for us, we don't think we have to. Eov didn't need to look either. Eov's job is the same as all of us, which is just to accept. The tshuva is just to accept, to be simple, to be a tam. Everything that's coming to me is from Hashem. Everything is for the good. I don't understand it, but that's okay. I'm accepting it from Hashem. You know what you're doing. I'm not arguing with you. Whatever you give is just. Whatever it is, the kindness as well. And I don't understand it right now.
He didn't do that.
He did in the end, but he went through a lot. Did in the end, and then Hashem rewards him, and he gets wealthy, and he gets married, and has lots of kids.
So not to be the annoying guy in the back room.
Oh, go on, you can.
So in the Tanakh, it talks about.
You can sit at the front. Be the annoying guy at the front.
It says that King Nebuchadnezzar has a special place in the pit reserved for him, and they're even preparing it while he's still alive, so he knows where he's going.
Where did it say that?
I can't remember if it's like one of the books that writes about him, or if it's in the prophets. But for sure it's the Tanakh. I've read it like 3 or 4 times. I just cannot remember the exact spot. I can look for it, but it always stuck out on me because I thought, pit, that sounds a lot like hell. We don't believe in hell.
We do believe in hell.
Well, Gehenna and hell are not the same thing. Hell is the Christian concept of Hades, which
we don't believe
eternal suffering.
Christian.
We don't believe in... Yeah. I heard that there's no belief in Judaism of eternal suffering.
Nachon, correct. Everyone will be rectified at some point. However, they may have to spend a long time down there. Korach is still where he is.
Right.
Right? And Bilam and Yoshki and Titus are also still suffering currently.
Right.
Which is pretty long. I don't know for how, right? But ultimately, all souls will be rectified.
So basically, without making you say the Baal Tanya is wrong, these things...
I would never say that.
I know, right? These things do point towards giving the Goyim Neshamas.
Where's
the
Goyim coming?
Neshamas.
Where's the Goyim? I haven't seen the Goyim in any of this. I'm only talking about Jews.
Well, I'm talking about two Goyim right now.
Which Goyim?
Nebuchadnezzar is definitely a Goy.
Okay, but so what are we saying? What's
he's going
different?
To the pit. Why would... If he doesn't have Neshama, how can he go to Gehenna?
If he doesn't have...
Animals don't go to Gehenna, and the... Kabbalah believe animals are going to the same level. That's what the Kabbalah is telling. They say that a goy has an animal spark.
Unless the goy has a spark.
Don't know. It's a question for someone else. It's a question for... No, it's an interesting point. It's a question for someone else.
We know he's reincarnated. As son of the saint.
Right.
I mean, there are coins showing Sodom the Saint and Nebuchadnezzar on the same, and he kept saying, Sodom the Saint kept saying that he is a reincarnate of Nebuchadnezzar.
So back to Eov. So what does Eov say? So Eov says that, therefore, these things 2 or 3 times with a man, to return his soul from the pit, to be enlightened with the light of the living. So the Zohar comments on this, and Zohar explains what's going on here. Zohar says that, what's his 2 or 3 times? So Zohar says that when a person is first comes down, his first Gilgul, he has 2 or 3 times to make some improvement. If he makes an improvement on his two or three Gilgulim, why two or why three? It depends on how he lives, whether he gets 2 chances or 3, depending on. But 2 or 3 chance. If in 2 or 3 Gilgulim he starts to improve his neshama, to fix it, to do what he needs to do, his task in the world, then he gets up to 1,000 generations, up to 1,000 Gilgulim. To come back and fix. But if not, if he doesn't improve in the first two or three, then his soul, he is kilu taken away. His neshama is taken away from the nefesh and then given to someone else to deal with. It's rectified another way. Meaning that nefesh that disappears, so to speak, is not, and he loses his opportunity.
Comes down to
the bit that needs rectification goes to someone else. Like, so you had your chance and you didn't fix it, it goes to someone else.
How does it?
I don't, it's fine.
right now, it is.
It's interesting because it's true. Most of us, I learned that most of us are bits of a lot of things. We're not just one person.
Right. All right.
There's no such thing as one person.
Right.
We're actually a whole bunch. And really, we're actually a piece of everyone. Look at the 600,000 pieces.
Right.
Really,
right.
That's what someone called me.
Right. So what? Nachon. So what we one of the things that we said was that each soul is made up of five different parts, right? Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chia, and Yechida, right? And each of those five parts has five parts of its own, which is the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chia, and Yechida. Of each one has that five levels within it. So five times five, 25, multiplied by 600,000 roots is all the different bits of soul that need fixing. Right? And ideally, there's only 600,000 and they all get fixed in one. Each person fixes, goes through, nefesh, goes through and completes them all. But where that doesn't happen, then that's when they get fragmented and they split up into different people to tick on different bits. So a person has a root. We're going to see also there's a. We'll come to how
like
the
main
bits
source,
are
or a root is the main source?
Yeah, the 600,000 main roots.
Then what about the neshamas that are trapped in inanimate objects and animals, such as cats?
Uh-huh. So we'll come to that. Okay, so let's. we're sticking with, at the moment we're still in the introduction about the sources of where we see in the Tanakh and in the books about Gilgalim. So another famous Gilgal that is quite well known is Pinchas. Pinchas is Eliyahu Anami, right? It says in several places. For example, Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, Pinchas hu Eliyahu. Pinchas is Eliyahu Anavi. Right? So how we understand that is most people understand that Gilgal, he came back as Eliyahu Anavi, not that Pinchas lived continuously, never died, and became Eliyahu Anavi. It's the same person, but they just changed his name. Kilu had a name change. But it's accepted that that's a Gilgal. That he lived about 500 years apart. Pinchas, why he came back? Don't know.
Some people believe that there are tzaddikim who come back to
send them here.
Promote things. They didn't do anything wrong, but the world needs their neshamas to lead them.
Yeah, that's something we're going to come on to, which is top. Maybe. Pinchas. Why did he come back? So we'll come to that. We have a whole chapter on different people who came back as different people and what the reasons were. So we'll look at it then. Okay, next, the Gemara in Kiddushin says. Sorry.
Nachon.
Right. So he. He
didn't give him a trial.
He had permission for that.
Let's have a look.
Wasn't refuted.
No, but we need it because of this generation, that's for sure.
Stoning. Maybe the first people have to take a stone and so they climb. So you can come back. It's the same.
It's not as simple. I thought there was a simple answer to you, but it's quite lengthy. Okay, Kiddushin, next. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, in comments on the Pasuk from Kohelet. In Kohelet, there's a Pasuk which says, the sun also rises, and the sun goes down, and goes back to the place where it rises again. Sun rises and sets and goes back to the place where it rises again. What does that mean? So the Gemara in Kiddushin says, what does that mean? It means that when a tzaddik does not leave this world until another tzaddik like him is born. For example, it says over there, it says in Kiddushin, when Rebbe died, Rabbi Yehuda was born. When Rabbi Yehuda died, Rava was born. When Rava died, Rav Ashi was born. So when one sun goes down, the sun comes up, right? There's here in the without Gilgulim, it just means that Tom Hashem puts. But in another sense, when the tzaddikim, they're the sparks. I mean, they take the next spark along. There's an essence of a Gilgul that continues. It continues from one to the next, according to that explanation. It's an interesting thing. Those who were here when after Rav Avadia died, one of the comments that was made in his Hesbedin about Rav Avadia is that he may well have been the Gilgul of Rav Yosef Karo. Right, both Rav Avadia and Rav Yosef Karo were known by the name Maran. Right, Maran, meaning our teacher. Right, that's what they called Yosef Karo. Right, Maran. He's the author of the Shulchan Aruch. Right, and they called Rav Avadia Maran as well. Right, and what was the comment made? The comment made that why was he the Gilgul? Because when Rav Avadia came, he came to fix all of the arguments that were made against Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo, all the later commentators came and argued and said, no, he didn't. Not all of them, but. He didn't get it right here, he made a wrong, he didn't consider this, he would have considered this, he would have not ruled that way, and lots of arguments, right? So what did Maran, Rav Avadia, do? So 40,000 books in his library, he went through all of them, and fixed everything, and explained exactly why Rav Yosef Karo was right, why he was right, and explained away all the challenges. Kilu. Basic. So you see there a classic case of potentially, we don't know, but of a Gilgul coming back to fix any problems, right? Rabbi Yosef Karo might have been at Kilu upset and said, look, I can't believe they misunderstood, I should have written it clearer, whatever, I need to come and fix it. Hashem, let me come back and just fix all the confusions about what I wrote in the Shulchan Aruch. Bring along Rav Avadia.
In that case, the person's coming back to be himself or fix himself.
Maybe,
not
in
right,
that case.
Not right.
No. Generally, in all cases, we're fixing. In a true Gilgul, there's something called an Ibur, which we'll come to, which is different. But a Gilgul is where I come back to fix stuff that I messed up.
You yourself.
Yeah.
So you yourself are coming back.
Yeah. I'm the same person. I'm a previous, neshama that's been here before, and I'm here again because I didn't finish my task of perfecting my neshama. If I would have done, I wouldn't need to come back. If I did all 613 mitzvahs in the way that they were all meant to be done, I would have fixed all my parts of my soul, and that's it, done. Gan Eden, everything's good. But because I didn't, and because of things which I messed up on, were not small things. If they were small things, then arguably I can get cleaned up in Shemayim, right? Through Gehinnom, through other things. But because they're pretty substantial, I have to come back. Particularly, man against man. Man against God is a lot easier to fix. Hashem can be forgiving, and you can, right? But man against man, it depends on the other person. the other person doesn't forgive you, you have to come back here and fix it. If I stole money from a person and $100,000, whatever it was, and it caused him to be poor his whole life, and he had a miserable life, and he's never forgiven me, and you get to Shemayim, and they say to you, do you forgive him for what he did to you? And you say, no. So now we both have to come back down in order to we've got a siddur here. In order to be fixed, in order to remedy it now here in this lifetime, I have to pay him back £100,000. And so we both have to come back as a Gilgal to do that. Now, truth is, everyone should know that you don't want to come back. So we say in the if you have a siddur, we say in the bedtime Shema, right? Say in the bedtime Shema, Yofi. Say in the right. We say, Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Harini Michal. I hereby forgive, and Hareini Mecholel Lekol Misha Chinis Lechinich. I hereby forgive anyone who angered me, upset me, whether accidentally, on purpose, etc., etc. Right? Why? Why do I say that before I go to bed? So I don't know if I'm going to wake up in the morning. Why is it important that I forgive people? Because if I don't forgive people, and I don't wake up tomorrow, I might have to come back down because I never forgave them. Right? I can forgive them upstairs in Shemayim, maybe, I think you can, but I don't know exactly how it works, right? But if I don't forgive, then the only way that the Shama can be rectified is if I get my recompense. I'm not going to forgive him because he hurt me, and I need to be satisfied. Yes? But the pshat here, the basic is that if I don't forgive, I have to come back. Right? We also see here, and I forgive everyone that affected me, right? Whether in deliberately, accidentally, begilgul zeh, begilgul acher, whether in this gilgul or a different gilgul, in this reincarnation or another reincarnation, right? It's part of our, you know, we can't, like the people who like, there's very few Jews nowadays that don't accept Gilgulim. Rabbis, like the average man in the street, it's still because he doesn't know nothing, right? He hasn't learned anything. But any Jew who learns knows that the Gilgulim is an accepted part of Judaism. That's what we believe in. It's a part and parcel of what it means to be a Jew.
If you kill the past Gilgul, you have to forgive the person basically who killed you. But you can't forgive him because you're already dead.
Ah.
So you have to come back.
Oh. No, so maybe you can forgive him then. I think you can forgive him in Shemayim.
There's a famous story about a Gugu, I believe it happens, an Arab in Israel, who was killed. He was killed as a young man, and shortly after the young man was killed, a child was born.
Right.
To another family.
Okay.
To a family. And he always claimed that he had a connection to this other family.
Right.
He knew where they lived, and he eventually found out through that how he died, or he knew how he died, and he, through the police, brought the guy who killed him to co- they caught the guy because he was able to identify them. It's in Zamir Kobe.
Yeah,
it's in
book. Right. So, but here also it could be that, just the other question though, whether or not you get a chance to forgive and not have to come back. If you got killed, then you probably have to come back anyway, because you got killed early. Like your life is taken away, so you need to come back and fix the rest of the time that you didn't have. So you probably do need to come back anyway. Maybe. But the concept of forgiving someone so you don't have to come back is very real. Is very real. So a person should try and say that thing before he goes to bed. right? To forgive, and to forgive people anyway, right? To mean it, right? Oh, I don't really forgive you, right? Not an easy thing. It's not an easy character trait to just be forgiving, because we don't want to have to come back. We don't want to have to come back because, right, I'm the one that got wronged. Why do I have to come back? Because I held a grudge. I could forgive, so that's why you have to come back. If even though I was perfect, Gila, I didn't need to come back, suffer through all this again, right? But it's because I held the grudge. So what Rabbi Reuven was saying, that Rabbi Arush has a good insight, good advice for people, which is that we've upset people in our lives. We have, right? Particularly in the past when we weren't so nice as we are now. But even now, it happens knowingly, unknowingly, right? And people can be cruel and mean and hold grudges, and they may not want to let it go. And you might get to Shemayim and find that you get dragged back down here. You're sitting there in Gan Eden, learning in the yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva, and everything's wonderful. And then you get dragged down back to this Gehenna. Right? Why? Because somebody's not forgiving you. So what did Rabbi Arush say? Rabbi Arush said that a very good eitzah is to take a mitzvah, such as hafatzah, and to dedicate that mitzvah to anyone I have upset or wronged in my life. How? So, for example, in hafatzah. So, if you want to do hafatzah yourself, which is also good, or just easier, frankly, and quicker, is just go downstairs to Frida and hand her a wad of cash, right? Depending on how much hurt and upset you think you've caused to people. So, if you think there's a lot to clean up, give her a lot of cash, and say, this is for hafetzah. And she will then use that for hafetzah, for giving out books. What happens then? You say, all the merit of this mitzvah, of hafetzah, or the merit of whatever mitzvah, but hafetzah is a really good one to do, right? All the merit of this mitzvah should go to those people that I have wronged or upset, only on condition that they forgive me. Only on condition that they forgive me. So what happens spiritually? Spiritually what happens is, when they get to Shemayim, banging the table and demanding justice from this one and that one, and they say, and him I'm never forgiving what he did to me, right? I'm bringing him back. And they say, oh, wait a minute, we've got this huge mitzvah of hafatzah that caused all these people to do teshuva, and you don't know what, it's huge light. You can have all that if you forgive him. Oh, all right. Right, and they take their... That mitzvah is now written into their name if they accept to forgive you. I've done it, and I recommend it to anyone else, because why not? Right? And if Rabbi says it's good enough for me, and on the off chance he was wrong, it cost me several hundred shekels, which went to hafatzah, is a good thing anyway. So everybody wins. It's a win-win. Or take them yourself. Buy 200 CDs and go distribute them, sit them on people's cars in the car park. Okay. Where were we? So, Yofi, next. Another example of Gilgulim reincarnations that we find is the 10 martyrs. The 10 martyrs, Rabbi Akiva and the 10 of them all together, 9 others, right, who were all killed by the Romans in varying ways of very harsh ways that weren't nice at all, right? Nasty way, right? Why? What for? So, we have an answer. Nachon, the brothers. The Romans. So the story is that the Roman ruler, Lulianus, decided that he wanted to torture some Jews. Stop, that's what they do. But he needed an excuse. So what was his excuse? So he said to the Jews, according to your own Torah, anyone who kidnaps a person, even if you don't kill him, if you just kidnap him, you're liable to the death penalty, right? Liable to death penalty. And they said, yes, that's correct, according to our Torah. So then he said, well, you'll see that Yosef's 10 brothers, there was only 10 at that time, because Binyamin wasn't born, 10 brothers were guilty of the death penalty. And they weren't punished. So I'm going to exact punishment from you now and take 10 of your leading rabbis, and they're gonna be in place, because we Romans like to make sure everything's fair. So what happened? So the Gemara or the Midrash, I'm not sure, says that Rabbi Ishmael pronounced one of Hashem's names and went into Shemayim to see if it was correct. And I was told by the angel Gabriel that this is the correct decree of Hashem. And that's why they all went willingly, Ki'ilu, to accept it. That's why they all died on Kiddush Hashem, because they knew that this was a correct tikkun for that thing. Even though there were all reasons and explanations and yofi, there was a level of tikkun that was still needed to be done.
But does that mean that they had to be, each one was one of the brothers?
Yeah, it means that each one had within him a part of the neshama of each of the brothers that needed to be rectified, that couldn't have been rectified without that, because they all had that on their conscience. We know that even in the stories in the parasha we're reading now, right, that we get to meet Kate's, and they're all still worried that we did something wrong and we sold you, and Yosef says, don't worry, Hashem did it and it was all for the good, and right, but they knew that we need a, how are we going to ever undo this, rectify this? Answer, 10 martyrs. It's going to be rectified, but it's going to be later. Right, what you did was incorrect. They incorrectly kidnapped their brother. It needs to be a... Even Reuven. Yeah, he could have taken him out. He was sold him. You're not allowed to sell him either. He stuck him in. He told not to kill them, but they stuck him in a pit. It's still.
Safe. They would come back. He wasn't there.
Okay, so don't know. It's a good question. So maybe he had a lighter sentence.
He didn't know this.
Which one of
them? Which one
didn't die such a terrible death?
Yeah. There's a famous story in. It's not brought in here, but the famous story of the Nuremberg trials and the Hitler's 10 henchmen, right, that were the Gilgul of Haman's 10 sons, and it's brought in the Megillah. When the 10 sons are listed in the Megillah, the three letters that are written large in the Megillah spell out the date 1947, when they were hung, right, and when Julius Streicher, Maximov, was hanged. One of the 10 who was going to be hanged, just as they were putting the noose around his leg, he shouted out Purim Fest, 1946. Right? Why did he shout out Purim Fest? Because it was Purim. And why does it say? Because it says over there in the Megillah on that place that Esther asked permission for this to be done and to be done tomorrow. And tomorrow, to do the same again tomorrow on the next. And what's the tomorrow? The tomorrow is the 10 that's going to be hanged tomorrow. Also, the interesting thing is that we know that one of Haman's children that also died was his daughter. His daughter committed suicide when she found out that the story is that when he took lead Mordechai around on the horse and said, this is what it's done to the one who, right? He thought it was going to be him. And his daughter thought that it was going to be Mordechai taking Haman around. So she poured over the chamber pot on his head from the window. And she poured it onto the head of her father. And when she realized what she did, she jumped off and killed herself. But the Midrashim say on that. So anyway, so in the story of the Nuremberg trials, yeah, there was 11 to be hung that day. And the night before, Goering, who was known to be a transvestite. Transvestite, i.e. had a woman's neshama, right, which is why he was a transvestite. Right?
There's killed a whole article in magazine on that.
Killed himself. Committed the same thing, and it's the complete praise. Gilgulim.
There's so many things to match up. Life magazine, like the 50s, did a special on it. You can see that there's like an ancient story that all the matches up of Nuremberg trials. The dragon, I think it was Goering, he was saying Purim Fest. He's basically saying that as they were taking him to the gallows, he was screaming that out. It all completely, it's eerie how much it matches up. They delayed the trial to the month, just like they delayed the Gezerah on the Jewish people. Everything just lined up. Amazing.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube on this, and it's yes, it's linked to. I have a link to it on JerusalemCast.com.
The website that has everything. Gosh, Tov, let's continue tomorrow.